Donald Trump's first 100 days in office. What do you think? What do I think? How does the economy feel about this? We're going to talk about his poll numbers and how everybody is judging his first 100 days in office. We're also going to talk about Governor Wes Moore and his recent national appearances. I'm pretty sure I understand why he thinks he should run for president, but what does Maryland think? We're going to talk about all of that on this week's episode of Straight Talk with Euripsy Morgan. All right, so let's get started. It has been 100 days since Donald Trump took office, and it feels like it was just yesterday. And approval ratings, poll numbers are out, and his approval ratings are not great. Now, this is not a surprise to me. So according to Real Clear Politics, his approval rating is about 41%. And it's a really low number, okay? It has not been that low since, I think, 1953. And you know who else? The only person to beat him was Donald Trump in 2017 when his approval rating was 41%. So I say that because, you know, in his first 100 days, there's been a lot of news and media about how does America feel? Are we on the right track? And to be honest, I am not surprised. I don't like it. There's a reason his approval rating is at 41%, but I'm also not surprised that his approval rating is 41%. It's 47%. It was 41% in 2017. So what I mean to say is we've been here before, okay? This is not new territory for him. He is generally unpopular, which is a strange thing because he got reelected even after a very unpopular time. But here's the thing. I think the reason that Donald Trump is, the reason that the approval ratings don't necessarily matter is one, as I said, because I think the American public is very used to this. Well, this is Trump 2.0, so there's nothing really new about this. But two, because he was hired to do two things. And one was to fix the economy. And number two was to fix the border. So on those two things, we'll get to the economy in just a second. But I want to talk first about immigration, because that is where I think he has a resounding victory. The April numbers just came out about the border crossings. And I think they're at around 8,700 border crossings for the entire month of April, which may sound high, unless you remember that at the height of the Biden administration, we had about 8,000 to 10,000 border crossings per day. Every single day, there were about 8,000 to 10,000 border crossings. And now in the month of April, the Trump administration has gotten down to about 8,700 for the entire month. So let's talk about that real quick, right? How do I feel about Donald Trump is irrelevant because, as I said, he was hired to do two things, fix the economy, fix the border. And on the border, he is doing very, very well. Now, I deal in a lot of different types of law, right? I'm an attorney. But one of the types of law that I have recently started getting more into is immigration. And I'll tell you, to be honest, it is not a form of law that I ever wanted to get into, in large part because it's a part of law that I feel is very, very broken. And it's difficult for me as an attorney to work in a system that I feel is broken. And I don't mean to say that in like the political sense of, oh my gosh, we have a broken immigration system. No, I mean, we have a very frustrating immigration system that doesn't make sense. You have people who really need, and I think would be great additions to America, but the legal pathway for them to come to America is so convoluted that in many cases it really doesn't exist. So sometimes we talk about people getting in a line. Depending on what country you come from, that line could be about 24 years long. So it doesn't make sense for a lot of people. And then on the other hand, you had Democrats under the Biden administration who absolutely ignored some of our basic laws. And Biden, I think, and his administration in many ways enticed people. They encouraged people to come. Remember back when they had these t-shirts, the crossing the border, and it had Biden's name on them? Like, you were encouraging them to come. And that's terrible. So because I work in the legal system, I have seen a lot of cases where people, you know, I'll ask them, you know, how long have you been in the country? Did you apply for asylum? And 9 times out of 10, they'll tell me, I came here for, you know, for a better life, to work. I'm like, okay, well, that is not how asylum works. In lay terms, we think asylum means I need help. Remember, like sanctuary, like the old Hunchback of Notre Dame, you know, running into the cathedral. I need sanctuary. That's not, asylum is an actual legal definition. And you can only claim asylum, and I want to make sure that I get this right, if you are facing persecution or have fear of persecution, reasonable fear, right? You can't just say it. You have to have evidence of or be able to demonstrate that you have reasonable fear of persecution in your home country due to five factors. It's race, religion, nationality, social group, or political opinion. Not economic woes, not I can't feed my family. And even though that is a grave issue, it is not one that is legally recognized by the claim of asylum. So I say all of that to mean that I think the American public, is particularly over the last 4 years of the Biden administration, looked at what was going on in terms of immigration and said, we are a compassionate people. But what Biden did was just open the floodgates and let people in. I mean, you're letting in 10,000 people a day. You cannot properly vet those individuals. And as an attorney who does practice criminal defense, I see a lot of what happens when people come here and they don't understand that they have to follow our laws because they don't even know what our laws are. They don't even understand, you know, what they're supposed to be doing. And in some cases, you know, and in many cases, I think they've been led to believe that a lot of the rules just simply don't apply. And that's how you ended up with the situation where all of a sudden Donald Trump comes in and says, oh, I'm going to crack down. You know, you've got this border czar. And I, like you, have seen a lot of images of people, you know, of ICE agents breaking windows to get people out of cars and wearing masks while they're, you know, interrogating people or detaining people. And yes, it is concerning. It is very concerning. But you can understand how the pendulum has swung the other way because the American public has been so frustrated. So we'll talk about the economy, but when it comes to immigration, I think that Donald Trump, he kind of strikes me as like, I have two kids and there are times, especially with my older child, you know, God bless her, I love that child. But the number of times that I have to tell that child to pick stuff off her floor, I don't want to see things on her floor. And it almost felt to me, you know, like that situation where you finally tell your kid, if I see one more thing on the floor, everything is going in the trash. Everything is going in the trash, you know. And I have gathered things and put them in a big black plastic bag and said, you know, we're done. I've warned you 5 times. I've warned you 10 times and you didn't listen. And now we're taking drastic measures. Now, if you were to walk into my house and that was the only thing you saw, you walk in my house and all of a sudden I'm carrying a black trash bag and I am tossing my kids, you know, stuffed animals and her, you know, crayons into that bag, you might be like, horrible mother, you know, this cruel person. Yeah, you know what? You didn't also see the 15 times that I told her to pick up her stuff, that I warned her that this was going to happen, that I explicitly showed her the plastic bag. And she didn't care. I'd take drastic measures. Now, again, I'm not defending everything that he says, but we can't look at the things that are happening right now without the context of what has gone on in the last 40 years. Now, for me, I actually think that this could lead to a situation where we have real immigration reform. I've said it a million times, and it's because Donald Trump is motivated by money and power. He is a businessman who ran as a Republican. So I think if somebody, Democrat, Republican, whoever, if everybody could, you know, kind of get over your feelings, your 47% approval rate of him, right? Like if we could get over our feelings about Donald Trump and get somebody in there to really whisper in his ear and show him how a comprehensive immigration policy would be beneficial for America and for him, right? Because it really is. It is the Donald Trump show and the rest of us are just kind of hanging out here. If somebody could get in his ear and propose a plan that would make him look good, give him the credit. I mean, to be honest, like, have you not dealt with folks like this before? It is the easiest thing in the world. We know what he's motivated by. So it would be, I think, it would make sense and it would be the best thing for America if somebody could explain to him how this would benefit him and benefit America in the long run. But let's talk in just a second about the economy. I'm in the car a lot, and to keep from being bored, I just listen to stuff on iTunes and Spotify. And now you can catch this show. You can subscribe to Straight Talk with Europe C. Morgan on YouTube at Y Morgan Show, but you can also find us on iTunes and Spotify. All right, so Trump's first 100 days in office. What about the economy? Take a listen to this. This was Trump on Face the Nation recently.
Are you comfortable with the country potentially dipping into a recession for a period of time if you are able to achieve your long-term goals?
Well, you know, you say some people on Wall Street say, well, I'd like to tell you something else. Some people on Wall Street say that we're going to have the greatest economy in history. Why don't you talk about them?
Some people, I swear, the whole if I had written a paper like that in the ninth grade, I would have gotten an F. Some people say. Anyways, this is not a defense of Donald Trump, but the key point of that clip is the for a period of time. And that's what I think a lot of pollsters and a lot of folks in the media are missing. Now, I am not defending Donald Trump's economic policies on this. Like, let's just be really very clear. I am not a fan of the tariffs because we have seen historically how tariffs harm, how they can be incredibly harmful for the country that is placing the tariffs. So America, I think this is overall bad for American consumers, the American public, these tariffs, they're not great. But however, this discussion is more about how does America feel about his economic policies. And I think the key word is, the key phrase is for a period of time. She's asking him there, Mr. President, how do you feel about, you know, are you okay with us going into recession for a period of time? And I think a lot of Americans, especially people who voted for him, view this time as a, you know, with the stock market just, it's bonkers. Like, you wake up on any given day and it feels like one day you're doing great. The next day it's like, wow, I'm never going to retire. Okay. For me, I just, you know, I'm not looking at anything. I'm not looking. My husband will come home sometimes and he's like, oh, did you see our 401k? And I'm like, I sure did not. I am not interested in that. Don't talk to me when I'm 60. Okay. And certainly don't talk to me about it right now. I don't want to hear it. It's too up and down. I will not sleep. But if you are in those retirement ages, then God bless you. But I do think that a lot of Americans, one, because they're not always checking their 401ks, and a lot of Americans view this as a temporary thing, as a means to an end. Where on the other hand, if you looked at Joe Biden, right, it felt like that was never going to end because at no point was he saying, I am doing this so that we can have this 180, right, this different turn. It was like, no, we're going to keep doing this. We're going to keep doing this. This is great. We're on the right path. And I think most Americans were like, this does not feel like we're on the right path. We are like headed off of a cliff. With Trump, however, and this is, I think, a personal thing to Donald Trump. So let me just tell you a quick story. I have this one workout class, and the trainer, so it's like a 50-minute bar class, and the trainer looks phenomenal. This woman is beautiful. I mean, she has the type of Pilates body that I'm like, what, you look fantastic. And so she could pretty much tell me to do anything, you know, at 5:30 in the morning. And I'm like, I will do it. You know why? Because I want to look like her. And because I trust that what she is telling me to do will somewhere, you know, I'm never gonna look like her, but I trust that it will somehow get me there. So if she was to tell me, you know, start eating like ginger root every day at 5:30 in the morning, guess what I would do? I'm going to start eating ginger root, right? Even though it is maybe gross. But if that's what she does, then I mean, I guess I'm more likely to believe her than someone else. Now, there are some limits to that. With Donald Trump, I do think that there is a measure of, I don't know, like we look at Donald Trump sometimes, or a lot of people I think are more likely to follow what he says because he is so rich. You know, the man is so filthy, stinking rich that I think a lot of Americans are saying, yeah, but on, he's like the trainer that's like, somehow you got there. So I'm more likely to listen to what you say. And if you're saying that these tariffs are a good idea or that this is temporary, right? Just like my workout class. My workout class is temporary. I'm there for 50 minutes. I can count every single one of those minutes and it will end. And I think that, and at the end of that, I should look better, right? I'm not gonna look like her, but I should look better. And I think that a lot of Americans maybe are looking at these tariffs or the current economic woes, the pain that we're feeling and saying, I don't like this. This doesn't feel good. But somehow he made money. And so therefore I am going to trust the process. Now, as I said, I don't agree with it. I think that it is the wrong process. And for all I know, my trainer may be on Ozempic. I have no idea. Maybe she's faking the whole thing. Maybe she's, you know, getting up at 5:30 in the morning because she's getting paid to do it. But maybe she goes home and eats the cheeseburger. And like I said, maybe she's just on Ozempic and does, you know, lipo. I have no idea. And that's the concern with Donald Trump as well. Because yes, realistically, Donald Trump has a ton of money. He also has had historically a ton of debt, a ton of bankruptcies, a ton of business failures. And so because I'm kind of more a fly on the wall here, you know, I am not at the age where I am ready to retire. And I have never been a, you know, dyed in the wool Trumper. I have been more of a, I don't know what I mean. I mean, sometimes I feel like I've been hit by a truck, you know, but realistically, I feel like I have been much more in the middle, much more moderate. And so I can look at some of his policies and say, okay, I understand how those could be beneficial, but I can look at some of his policies and say, like, this is a disaster waiting to happen. And particularly the way that he uses the courts, the way that he uses lawsuits, doesn't work like that in the government. And I think, you know, even in the second term, I don't think he's really realized that. But you can also see how he's backtracked a lot of his own policies. Remember, in the first, he was going to do this 90-day tariffs on everybody under the sun, including our friendly nations. And there is now a 90-day pause on that. Other than China, I think we're at like 145% tariffs. And, you know, regardless of his low approval numbers, 47%. Y'all, he was at 41%. In, you know, 2017, and he got reelected. So do I think that it's going to be detrimental to him? No, but I do think that, I think it's kind of funny too, that we as Americans have such short-term memories. It kind of reminds me of Carrie in Big, in Sex and the City. It's like Big was always a much better boyfriend when she wasn't with him. She tended to forget how bad he was when she was dating all these other guys, and she would romanticize him, and then she'd start dating Big again, and it was like, oh yeah, I forgot, he was a total jerk. In America, we have really short-term memories politically. We forget the bad and only focus on the really good stuff, or the things that made us feel good at the time. So I don't know, maybe we're in a Carrie and Big relationship with Donald Trump, except there is an expiration date on here, 4 years. Whether or not he is going to have the turnaround on the economy, I think the fact that he is doing what he said he was going to do on immigration gives him a lot of leeway, right? And, you know, hopefully things will get better. Hopefully, you know, housing prices, people will be able, the interest rates will go down and people will be able to buy homes and we're not paying an arm and a leg for a vehicle. And the tariffs eventually do go away. But as far as his approval ratings, I think he's always been an unpopular president. I think he, and yet he still gets elected and reelected. So maybe his approval ratings have less to do with his popularity and more to do with his policies. If you're enjoying the show, make sure that you subscribe to Straight Talk with Euripsy Morgan on YouTube at Y Morgan Show. Also, you can find us on iTunes and Spotify. Sometimes I feel like the easiest way to see or hear from our own Governor Wes Moore is to turn on the national news, because he sure as heck is not in the state of Maryland. Recently, he was on The View, and as much as he insists that he's not running for president, listen to this from Joy Behar.
You sound very presidential to me today.
He always has sounded presidential.
You know, but Democrats have been in a bit of disarray. We know that. I mean, they're having problems. A lot of it... self-inflicted, probably, I don't know. But you've emerged as a promising new face of the Democratic Party and a possible contender for 2028. So even George Clooney has said, I wish he would talk about me that way. He said, you're a proper leader and, quote, someone we could all join in behind. I believe that's true. I think that means you have to run. Are you going to run?
I am.
He goes on to insist that, no, I'm not running. But Joy... Okay, first of all, she talks about how some of the wounds are self-inflicted. If you start a sentence with George Clooney or insert any celebrity, how have you not learned that the American public does not care? We do not care if a celebrity... George Clooney has a house, I think, on the Amalfi Coast. I had to save money. And we, my husband and I went on I think it was our 10-year anniversary. And we went a year late, mind you, because we were still saving money. But we went to Italy you know, after saving our money and being married 10 years, and this man has a house in Italy on the Amalfi Coast. I don't care what he has to say. I'm not interested in who he wants to run for president. We're not in the same sphere, all right? The things that concern me and my household, I would be shocked if George Clooney even understood, right? Don't start a sentence with George Clooney said. Unless George Clooney said, go watch this movie, I don't particularly care. So that right there tells me you guys are still so out of touch with what the American public believes. But his continued insistence that he is not going to run for president. Now, I am a resident of Maryland. I live here. My kids go to school. We pay taxes here. So I got a real bone to pick with this constant insistence. And listen, I understand how it politically he has to keep saying, oh, I'm not going to leave. I'm not going anywhere. But you know what? It feels to me like we just had the draft, all right? And I think there are probably a lot of girlfriends right now having conversations with their newly drafted boyfriends about who's coming and who's going, right? And I feel very much like Maryland is that girlfriend on draft day who knows he's out of here. All he's waiting on is that one phone call, and there is not going to be a ring. He's not going to be going to your prom or your, you know, college graduation. He's gone. Girl, he just got drafted by the Cowboys. He's out of there. All right. In Maryland, I feel like we are in a very similar position. As soon as, you know, Donald Trump's time is suddenly you're going to see, you know, I thought we couldn't do this. I thought we shouldn't do this. You know, I needed to stay home, but the American public needs this. And next thing you know, I predict it's going to be sometime around late November of this year, if not next year. So it's 2026. I actually think that it's going to be, no, I take that back, around 2027. I would say in the late fall, early winter of 2027, all of a sudden it's going to be like, daggone it. I tried to stay out of it, but I just couldn't let America. And next thing you know, it's going to be Wes Moore for president. And somehow I'm supposed to act surprised. Like when the Dallas Cowboys called and drafted you, I'm supposed to act surprised and now you want to break up. I am not surprised. For my part, I'm going to start, you know, working on my plan B because this is, and I think Maryland should be doing the same. This guy is out of here as soon as he has the opportunity. Now, she goes on to talk about the reasons that she thinks that he should run. And that to me is fascinating because I understand why she thinks he should run because she's not a Maryland resident. I say Joy Behar was not a Maryland resident as far as I know. And even if she was, I promise you, we're not in the same tax bracket. So my concerns are not her concerns. All right. But why he thinks he should run for governor is, I think, obvious, if not very deceptive. He's obviously got the story, right? He's got the other Wes Moore. This was a kid from Baltimore who could have gone. In the book, The Other Wes Moore is actually very good. Highly, highly recommend it. Just understand that that guy does not exist with this guy, all right? So the two totally different people. And I don't just mean that Wes Moore. I know it's very confusing, but I'm not even sure who the real Governor Wes Moore is. But what I mean to say is he has the story and he has the persona. He has the personality. I'll just tell you this real quick story. So when he ran for governor, so if you don't live in Maryland, Maryland is a solidly blue state. Republicans are outnumbered 2-1, which means that there are 2 Democrats for every 1 Republican. Like, we are solidly outnumbered. So all you had to do was win the primary. And he was running against a terrible, terrible Republican candidate. So literally all he had to do was win the primary and stay alive to election day, and ta-da, you were governor. But I remember seeing him at a campaign stop, and he had this big bus, and he ran out of there and was like, yeah, you know, all fired up and stuff, and, you know, we're going to win, and this is great, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, who is he talking to? There's like 4 people out here. You know, and like, what is happening? And that is very indicative of how Wes Moore operates. Like, he's a very, it's almost like when he goes out in public, the 30 seconds before he goes out in public, there's a scene, you know, and there's an acting coach, and all of a sudden, you know, and then it's like, all right, and lights, camera, action, go. And then he runs out and it's like smiles, and he's got the personality and he's got the persona and he's got the voice and the looks and the family. And it's like, wow, this looks great. But then as soon as you yell cut, Now we don't know what we're doing. Because let me tell you what's actually going on in Maryland. We'll talk about that in just a second, but I want to get to his response about what he believes is going on in Maryland. Listen to this.
I'm really excited about the work that's happening right now in the state of Maryland.
He's killing it there.
Yeah, I mean, things in Maryland, when you look at everything from labor force participation, the fact that Maryland is now the first state in the country that has a service year option for all of our high school graduates.
That so much.
And all of them now have a year of service that's where they can find the thing that makes their heart beat a little bit faster.
The city has a match for first-time homeowners.
That's exactly
right. For
the
down payment, I was able to buy my first home in Baltimore City.
Yes.
Because of that.
And I mean, the work that we're doing, we passed the most aggressive housing package of any Maryland governor in recent history to make sure we can make more people and turn them into renters, into homeowners.
But what you're saying is what makes good presidents.
Join, let the man live.
What he's saying and what he is doing are two complete opposite things. Do you know how much this makes my blood boil? I used to wait tables at this little restaurant, and I remember, it's not a little restaurant, it was a steakhouse in near Dallas, but it turned very corporate. And I remember when it became very corporate, we got this new manager, and he was such a pain in the ass. I mean, this man to this day, I still think about him occasionally, but he made work so awful. And then I remember like corporate came down. We had some people from corporate and they were coming in and everybody was like, make sure your shirts are starched and everybody's on their best behavior. And they came in and, you know, they were like reviewing everything and, oh, how's everything going? And we're all supposed to be sitting there like, and this guy, this new manager is like, everything is wonderful. Morale is at an all-time high, you know, and he was going on and on and on about how great the atmosphere was. And we're all sitting back there like, the heck? Like, what universe do you live on? I wanted to be like, help, help, you know, tell corporate, like, this guy is crazy. It sucks to work here. I want to leave right now. If I didn't have bills, I would be gone. That's what it feels like listening to Governor Wes Moore go do all of these, you know, showcase his accomplishments in Maryland on national TV, on The View, because these women are not pushing back. Joy Behar's flipping in love with this man. You know, his wife should be concerned about him sitting so close to Joy Behar, the way that she is gushing over him. Meanwhile, here in Maryland, I'm like, back up one second. What do you mean the great things that you're doing in Maryland? We had a $5 billion with a B dollar surplus when he took office. You know where we're at now? We had a $3.3 billion deficit. He went from $5 billion doing great to now $3.3 billion in the hole. In order to try to dig the state out of that, Democrats passed $1.7 billion in new taxes. He keeps going on and saying, oh, you know, we cut income tax. $2. That's about the savings that Marylanders are going to get. $1, $2, all right? I don't want to get it twisted. I don't want you to think that I said something. Dollars is what we are going to be getting. Meanwhile, we're going to be paying tons more for everything from our vehicles to our gas. They tried to pass a mattress tax in this state, for crying out loud. I mean, $1.7 billion. There was a new IT tax that is taking effect. At the same time that this governor is saying, we want to bring in quantum computing, we want to be like Virginia or whatever, and we're going to have all of these great resources. Six Flags just announced they're closing their doors in Maryland. You can't even keep Six Flags. And you know how furious I am about this? You can't even keep Six Flags. And yet this governor is going out and saying that we did all of these wonderful things. I want to make sure that I get this right. But there was a quantum computing. This is not my realm, so I want to make sure that I get this right. A company, IonQ, they are the leading commercial quantum computing and networking company. And they're based right here in Maryland. They just announced this week that they're going to be opening a new quantum innovation center, not in Maryland, but in Tennessee. And experts have warned this entire legislative session, we have a 90-day session here in Maryland. Experts were shouting from the rooftops, these taxes will drive businesses out. Maryland is already one of the top states in the entire country for businesses leaving, like getting out of here. Our residents are consistently moving out of the state, particularly those who are already retired, because they're like, I can't live here anymore. The amount of taxes in Maryland is astounding. It is not sustainable for Maryland retirees, for families, for anybody really. And that is a huge detriment to everyone, because the more people leave, the more they take their money with them. And the less people you have, the less money, the less economic stability that you have. And this is a state that has relied extremely heavily on federal workers. A significant part of our workforce are federal workers, which, yes, now that a lot of them are being laid off, is becoming a huge detriment to the city, to the state, because we have had a very lazy economy. And those are Governor Westmore's words. We have had a lazy economy that relied on federal dollars instead of building our economy. So here this guy goes on The View and he's gushing about all the wonderful things that are happening in Maryland. Meanwhile, I'm telling you, it's not true. I feel like I'm back in my, you know, in my waitress uniform as this corporate guy is telling everybody, it's fantastic. Oh, the workers love being here. And I'm like, save me. If I didn't have to be here for money, for food, I wouldn't be here. And in Maryland, to hear Governor Westmore go out and talk about things like his what is it called? It's this high school program, I guess, where students can go do this service year. I have nothing against that, but apparently a lot of people don't have anything for it either, because no one's doing it. It's not a thing, all right? Like, technically it exists. I guess it's an option, but no one's doing it. As far as I forgot that we even had that. This has not been. It's not like all high school graduates or even a significant amount of high school students are saying or are doing this service year. It's the first time I've heard of it since he got into office, to be honest. I totally forgot about it. And then you have Vincent Schiraldi. Oh my gosh. You know, this is a man who had such a horrible reputation for lax crime policies in New York, where he came from, that when he got hired, when Governor Moore appointed him and he got hired here, there was a New York, it was a council member, I think, that called into a local radio station to say, this guy is the worst, the disaster that he left, the mess that he left. He should not be anywhere near, you know, public policy again. And yet this is the guy that Governor Westmore has appointed as the department, as the head of the Department of Juvenile Services in Maryland. I mean, his leadership is so bad. And let's talk about his leadership for just a second, okay? So he is a Democrat. I told you Maryland is wildly Democrat, 2-1 Democrats, okay? He has this much control over the Democratic Party in the state of Maryland. Zero. He has no control over the Democratic Party. Because on the one hand, he will talk about, you know, the need to be more business friendly, the need to encourage businesses to come here, the need to have discipline, you know, in with our youth. And then what does he do? He appoints a guy like Vincent Schiraldi, who would rather have a barbecue with violent juvenile offenders than actually have any type of discipline. And instead of lowering taxes, he increases $1.7 billion in taxes, including an IT tax. And now we have companies like IonQ saying, oh, we are going to open a new facility. It's just not going to be here. Definitely not here. And they're already based in Maryland. Think about how easy it would have been for them to actually expand here. So for Governor Westmore, you know, the lack of leadership, you can't even control the crazies in Annapolis. You know, Annapolis is where we do all of our legislative, that's where our legislature meets. But I'm like, you have these, a lot of these folks are small potatoes. You know, these are, and I'm not trying to be ugly. I'm just saying, like, this is Maryland and these are state delegates and state senators, and you can't control them. You can't like rein in your own party. You're going to get eaten alive in DC. What do you think is going to happen in his own party? Again, I'm not even talking about Republicans. I'm talking about a governor who cannot control Democrats, wildly progressive Democrats in his own state, is somehow going to go to DC. Never mind Republicans. You're not going to be able to control, you know, some of the excesses within your own party. AOC, Bernie Sanders, is going to eat him alive, you know, and yet you have the ladies of The View fawning over him like he's the second coming of Christ. Okay, call your references. Please, America, Call your references. We are right here. Don't be like one of those employers that, you know, gets a great resume. Oh, you know, this person looks great on paper. Look at their accolades. Oh, you know, oh, they got these references. Maybe I should call them. Maybe I shouldn't. Call us. Call Maryland. We will tell you the truth about what's going on with Governor Westmore. Thanks for listening to Straight Talk with your Ipsy Morgan. We got some exciting stuff coming up, so make sure that you subscribe on our YouTube channel and invite your friends and family to do so too. You can also find us on iTunes and Spotify.